This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Still fighting for their 40 acres and a mule, the plight of black farmers.
It's been more than a decade since black farmers filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Agriculture because of decades of discrimination. Thousands of farmers have not yet had their day in court or been allowed to file a claim, even though the second phase of the suit, known as Pigford versus Vilsack, was settled in February of 2010.
The reason for this is that Congress has not provided the $1.25 billion for farmers who, through no fault of their own, suffered discrimination from the same government that now denies them relief. Now, the plight of black farmers with Gary Grant, president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association in North Carolina, Eddie Carton, president of the Mississippi Family Farmers Association, and Hezekiah Gibson, president of the United Farmers USA in South Carolina. Who should we begin with to give us some of the background on the plight of black farmers?
This is Gary Grant in North Carolina, and we've been discriminated against, even though the first lawsuit said, 1981, black folk have been in this country for how long, and we've only had discrimination going on since 1981? You mean it, that nothing was going on before then? So even if you take the 1981, and probably Eddie can speak to this much better than I can, $50,000 today doesn't buy a real tractor. Certainly won't get you a tractor and the implements that you need in order to keep farming going. These agents of the government that discriminated against black farmers have continued to have their jobs, be employed. Some of them by now probably have reached the age of retirement. They have their pensions. We are talking about farmers who have lost their homes. And it's interesting that when we were losing our homes, no one was crying. There was no kind of outcry as we marched the streets in Washington from the agricultural building up to the Capitol building. These farmers have lost their homes. They've lost their land. They've lost their way of life. I believe one of the people working in the North Carolina Department of Agriculture calculated, and we have lost in North Carolina between 1981 and 1996 something like $300 billion worth of assets, including land and the right to make a living by farming the land. So, yeah, we've got a real problem here on our hand, and we certainly hope that the Obama administration is going to get this straightened out. Eddie and I were in D.C., and we've been up many times before. I think we probably started going up in February of this year. And every time you go up, they tell us, oh, we support you, we support you, we support you. Well, if there's all this support for us, why is it that they can't come up with the money? We're not talking an astronomical amount of dollars. We're talking now all that's needed is $1.15 billion because the $100 million that the president put in his budget is already there.
This is Eddie Carton of Mississippi. I want to say that I concur with what Brother Gary Grant has said. It is true. But even to this day, those who prevail in the first lawsuit, they are still to this day being discriminated against. Even to this day, all over this country, especially in my county, we have the largest black-owned land than any county in the United States. That's Holmes County, Mississippi. I am the third generation of a black farmer. My daddy died in 1983. I began, took over the farm in 84. In 1984, we had approximately 200 black farmers in my county. Today, we have less than 10. Now, those who got the $50,000 in the first case, they're being discriminated today. 99.9% of the loans that are given out today from FSA office are white farmers. Black farmers are still being denied those few, and I emphasize few, who are trying to get loans to work their crops. They're being turned down saying they have bad credit or their loans won't cash flow. Why do they have bad credit? Why their loan doesn't cash flow? Because you discriminated against them previously, giving them loans in July and August. You plan for them to fail. You plan for their credit to be bad. the local banks, the local lending institution will not loan, did not loan black farmers money. The only resource that we had, the only era that we could go to was the government, which was back in that day, FHA. And they discriminated against us. The large plantation owners and the banks got together to freeze out the black farmer, and they have been successful of that. They're supposed to be, for those who prevail, they're supposed to be land in inventory, where because you lost your farm, you'd be the first to apply for this land that's in inventory. That is not being publicized. That land in inventory is being sold on the courthouse steps in every county.
Let's bring in Hezekiah Gibson from South Carolina into this discussion. Hezekiah, the amount of money that we're talking about is $1.25 billion. Is that enough money to settle these claims, and will everybody that deserves that money get it?
No. You know, the thing about discrimination is you have to go back. But in other words, the money that they're proposing to pay the black farmers won't even touch the damages. And then we talk about debt relief. Most black farmers didn't get debt relief. They got the $50,000. The next day, they were on their dough about back taxes and so forth. But I think the Pickford lawsuit, and Gary, if you remember, you were there. Everybody was in the courtroom was against it. And they still rule in the favor that the $50,000, and it was a compromise. Well, we'll take that if they come and give it, but they hadn't given it to us yet.
And how did you folks come by these farms?
It's family land. Some of it we bought, but most of it is family land, and we bought it. My father farmed, my grandfather farmed. And when I got out of service, I started farming.
And I'm in what's known as a New Deal resettlement community that was established in the 1930s under FDR's New Deal. That's called the Tillery Resettlement Farm, where some 10,000 acres of land was made available to black people to come and claim, register, and buy homesteads. I'm 67 now. When I grew up, there were 300 family farmers in my community. Today, there are three. And out of those three, none of them are the children from the resettlement era.
In my hometown, there was approximately 200, and I think that I'm the only one left, a viable farmer.
The thing that people need to understand about this whole Pickford situation is, as the guy was saying, we refer to Pickford 1, which was the settlement for 1999, when over 700 farmers from across the country came to Washington, D.C., and if I'm not mistaken, Hezekiah, I believe there were somewhere between 45 and 50 people who stood before Judge Freeman and told him that this settlement that the lawyers and the USDA had worked out would be the death nail to the black farmers in this country, and still
right.
The judge ruled in favor of it. The farmers were screaming foul. The only people who have made any money, who have really gotten a benefit out of this, are the attorneys who represented the farmers, those folk working for the government who continue to get their paychecks and their pensions and health insurance, while the farmers' health continues to decline. Also, the fact that what we don't understand is that this money is also taxable by the Internal Revenue Service, including the debt write-off. I know of one lady in my county here who actually had a heart attack when she got the write-off of like $300,000, and she got a tax bill for over $100,000 that she had to pay to the Internal Revenue Service. And we're talking about money that she has never seen. It's not even money that she's seen. The loan was probably somewhere around $50,000 to $75,000, is what she borrowed. This is what's known as interest compounded daily, somewhere around 8%, and late fees and all of this kind of stuff that has been done. The movement has basically put back into, especially in the South, the hands of the large landowners, the plantation system, where no longer blacks are actually able to survive.
Hezekiah, now where is this settlement right now? The courts have voted for it. The Agriculture Department agrees $1.25 billion. Obama agrees $1.25 billion. The House of Representatives has voted on this. What's happening in the Senate?
I don't think there's any movement in the Senate. They just failed to vote appropriate the funds for the payment. basically where it is. I think it's been up to the Senate 6 times and it hadn't gone through.
Senator Kay Hagan of North Carolina and Senator Mary, oh, I can't pronounce her last name, I believe, of Louisiana, introduced a bill asking that the Senate go ahead and appropriate the money. You know, that's, we are grateful that people are introducing bills, but for my understanding, the way the Capitol Hill works, you introduce a bill that has only one or two names on it, it's not going anywhere. It's just a matter, it's a formality. If you don't have 25 to 30 senators signing on to the bill when it is introduced, that you're more than likely not to get it. And here we are with senators going home to campaign for the November election, and we have already been voted out of 7 bills since February of 2010, and one standalone bill itself that Senator Harry Reid introduced, but when he introduced it, he said it would have to have unanimous consent. When does Washington, D.C. ever come to unanimous dissent other than to say that the 4-H Club is a good thing?
Well, heading back down to Mississippi, Eddie Carthen, what's important about giving the black farmers their just due? I started out by saying 40 acres and a mule. I couldn't help it because that's what it really reminds me of, people still being deprived of that right. They farmed, they worked the land. It's their land, but it isn't their land. What do we need to know?
Well, number one, when Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, they had no skills, and it was his plan to give each black farmer 40 acres and a mule where they could make a living. Well, Abraham Lincoln got assassinated, and his plan was dethroned. So no one was given the 40 acres and the mule. My grandfather, along with others, participated in that program that Brother Gary Grant was telling you about, where they were able to go into the local, at that time it was called the Farmers Administration Office, to borrow money to buy land, and they divided up plantations and allowed blacks to borrow money to buy land. But from that day to this day, the local financial institutions, the large white farmers, have been, by various different means, taking the land, stealing the land with all kinds of trickery. Even, you know, today, let me mention this as relates to where things are in the Senate right now. One of the attorneys called me this morning and said that the senator, the black farmers bill and the Indian Cobell bill has been attached to CR, which is continued resolution. The senator, the Republican senator from Kansas, has vowed to block it, given the statement that Brother Grant gave that there are other senators from North Carolina, from Ohio, who have had a change of mind and decided to introduce and vote for the Indian bill and the Black Farmers Bill. Now that's being brought down by this senator from Kansas.
What do we do? How do we support our brothers and some sisters, the black farmers, so that they get their land, which they farmed and their blood, sweat, and tears is rooted in the soil there?
Okay, we need to call those senators from all over this country and to let them know that the government need to make right that the mistake that they have made over the years against black farmers. This is only a drop in the bucket. At least they could do that to pass this. We need calls in to the senators all over this country right now, today, tomorrow. This is a tragedy that the government made. And here people holding government positions refusing to correct the error that the government made. And they've made these. This hasn't just happened. This has been a practice of the government for years, since my grandfather and my father had been farming. You know, even those who they gave loans to, they gave them late loans in July and August, you know, so they would fail. Their credit would be bad. Now those who have prevailed trying to get loans, they can't get it because their credit is bad and they won't cash flow. The average black farmer is around 150, 200 acres of land. You can't get government subsidies with that small amount of property. You need at least 500 acres of land to farm. And those blacks who own land are now renting to white farmers because there are no black farmers to rent to. And the few black farmers that are renting that are farming own less than 200 acres. So, you know, they're not getting help from the government in terms of the subsidies, and they are being turned down by the local FSA office, refusing to give them loans. It's a catch.
It's interesting that one senator can stop the movement of a bill in a, what is supposed to be a democracy. And as Eddie has said, every senator needs to be called. People have a tendency to think that this is just, if we deal with the Southern senators and the Midwest senators, that all of this will go away. It is not going away until every senator from every state in this country feels the pressure of the people telling them this country has mistreated a group of people and it needs to make it right.
Gary Biffa, what's the message that we are going to tell these senators that we call?
That they should vote to support any bill that comes up to pay the black farmers the $1.25 billion that is due them from the acts of racism and discrimination by government agents.
And in the 30 seconds or so that we have left, we want to go back to our brother Eddie Carthen, president of the Mississippi Family Farmers Association, and Hezekiah Gibson, president of the United Farmers USA in South Carolina. Let's go back to Eddie. What's the final message?
The message is, as my brother Gary Grant has said, we need to contact all of the senators and ask them to support this bill. Many black landowners and black farmers are on the verge of foreclosure as we speak. Many of them have passed. Something needs to happen now.
Hezekiah Gibson, United Farmers of USA, South Carolina.
I agree with both gentlemen, but what it is that, like you say, our farmers are dying. They need immediate relief. I would tell the senators to look at the past and try to correct it, and let's look forward to some sort of future. But the future of black farming is in doubt. If we were a bird or a frog, we'll be declared an endangered species, but we are not, and we're going to just wither away.
The National Black Farmers Association, we've been talking to a number of brothers throughout the country. Again, special thanks to Gary Grant, president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association, North Carolina, Eddie Carthen, president of Mississippi Family Farmers Association, and Hezekiah Gibson, president of the United Farmers USA, South Carolina. You are an endangered species, and we owe it to you. We owe it. We better get on the horn and say we want those bills passed. We want those billions of dollars that our brothers have waited entirely too long for. So we can't wind up with a headline that Senate fails to okay funds for years-old settlement with minority farmers. Thank you for all you've done, for the food, for the fighting, and we're going to make it right. We're going to demand that it's made right. Thank you, my brothers.
Thank you for the opportunity to share.
All right. Bye-bye.
Recently, Alice Walker accepted an award from the Federation of Southern Cooperatives Land Assistance Fund. Her brief but insightful remarks convey a sense of the real value of life and what we work for.
Take it out. So we can really see what it is. Lovely. Thank you.
The mic is yours.
Okay. I'm holding my father in my hand. And actually, in the last couple of days, I've been looking at the emblem on the Federation logo. And that is my father. That is my father, the sharecropper, the person who... This was a memory that was so painful that I completely blotted it out, which was when I was a little girl going to the field to carry water to him in a jar, and the water from a spring. We didn't have a well. We had a spring down the hill, and I would go and get the water, and I would take it to him to drink in the field, and he would be behind this mule plowing this field. Now, the part that was so painful that I blotted it out was how big the field was. For my mother, a similar thing. I was helped there because Bob Fletcher, who was the photographer for SNCC, I don't know if somebody in this room must remember Bob Fletcher's photographs, but he took a photograph of a woman pregnant, bigly pregnant, in a field so enormous. There she was with her hoe, one hoe. The field was so big, there was no end to it. And her child, and this was me, really, with my mother, going to sleep right in the dirt or at the edge of the field. So when I see this, I'm reminded, I can remember, going to take water to my father. He's out there with one mule and one plow, and he's been out there since before daybreak, and he is plowing this enormous field that he cannot see the end of. There's no way you could stand where he's standing and see the end of the field that he is plowing by himself, any more than my mother could see the end of the field that she was hoeing by herself. But one of the things about my parents, especially about my mother, is that when the white plantation owner came to her and said to her, "You can't send your children to school, I need them to work in my field," she said, "You know what? You may have some black children in some houses around here somewhere, but you don't have any black children in my house. My children are going to school." So these two people, with the neighbors, built a school for us. They built a school for us. They did this. And with that long hindsight that we get as we get older, I can see it so clearly. I can see the sacrifice. I can see the nights of walking the floor that was so flimsy, you could fall through it, because these were sharecropper shacks of the most extreme variety. But they were determined. And it is that determination that we inherit. And so when you think about, in these horrible times, of the earth just saying, "I have had it with humanity," and you wonder, what is it? I mean, will we make it? The only thing I can think of to say to us all is that we will make it collectively if we, quote, make it individually. And by making it, I don't mean some car or high-rise, you know, moving on up. No, thank you. But we will make it if we remain, as we cross that finish line, whatever it is, and however many storms and tornadoes or earthquakes are happening, if we cross that finish line as the people our parents suffered so much to make us. We will have made it. That is what making it means. That we remain the human beings that they struggle so valiantly to make us. Not giving up. Going out there and getting in those fields that were so big you could not see the end of them. For us. For the people in this room, they did that for us from sun up to sundown. And that is why I'm actually, Rudolph, whom I adore, has said of me that I am indifferent to awards. And it's true. I really pretty much, you know, my award came to me at birth, and it was to be here on this planet. I mean, what more could I possibly want? This planet is just, life itself is such a gift. But this award and the James Weldon Johnson Award, these awards mean a lot to me because they come from people who know where I come from. And we are in this together. I was talking to Louise Witherspoon Williams about her mother, Estelle Witherspoon, and how many things she reminded me, how many things her mother and my mother had in common, how many things I had in common with her mother, the quilting, the understanding that it is in community that we are strong, it is in community that we grow. And we cannot truly be ourselves without our land. We cannot. And we see what has happened to people who've lost their land. They've lost any idea what the land is about. I mean, they couldn't grow enough food to feed themselves no matter what. They have no idea what it's about. But we do. We come from a tradition where people respected the land, and they did not have to own the land in order to love the land. And this is one of the greatest things about our people. You do not have to own it to love it. And that alone puts us right in opposition to most of what this culture is about. And it is also part of our native tradition to be able to love the earth, you know, no matter what. So I want to thank you all for being here. It is a great time for me, this event, and it's been wonderful being with you. I love your warmth. I love your freedom of expression, your joyfulness. We must never lose these spontaneous abilities to express who we are and what we are and how we feel, and to believe in ourselves as we are. This is a great liberation, to always feel that the earth, the Creator, however you determine that, did not make a mistake in making us. There was no mistake. There was only joy.
And you were listening to Alice Walker. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.